Today, provide you with in-depth news and expert analysis, tell you the whole story and the bigger picture. Bring you the news you want to know only on Today.
Welcome to Today, a news program with a different perspective. I'm Zhao Ying. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un made a visit to China this week at the invitation of Chinese President Xi Jinping. This is Kim's fourth visit to China in a year. President Xi has told Kim Jong-un that Beijing supports a second summit between the North Korean leader and the U.S. President Donald Trump, adding that he hopes they meet each other halfway. For his part, Kim Jong-un said North Korea will make efforts to achieve results that will be welcomed by the international community at the next summit with the U.S. Kim said he hoped relevant side would take North Korea's reasonable concerns seriously and actively respond to them to promote a comprehensive resolution to the Korean Peninsula issue. So what's the purpose of Kim's visit to China? What does it mean to the peace and stability on the Korean Peninsula? And what about the prospect of the second summit between North Korea and the United States? For these questions and more, we are joined by Dr. Cheng Xiaohe, Associate Professor with the School of International Studies at Renmin University of China. He's also Senior Researcher of Pengo Institution. Dr. Stephen Nagy, Senior Associate Professor with the Department of Politics and International Studies at International Christian University. Also, Dr. Kim Chung Kim, Professor of Law at Korea University. Thank you all for joining us this evening. So, Dr. Chung,
good evening.
Dr. Chung, to start with you, perhaps, what exactly do you think are the purpose of Kim's visit to China this time?
Certainly, Kim Jong-un's came to China tried to achieve a number of the purposes. I think that in the first place, and I believe Kim's try to enhance China and the DPRK's relations, and you see this year would be the 17th anniversary of the establishment of diplomatic relationship between China and the DPRK. So he came to Beijing and talked to China's leader, tried to hash out some kind of a plan to celebrate such a kind of a 17 anniversaries. And I think that's the important thing he tried to do. Certainly, he tried to accomplish a second important missions. And this mission has something to do with the upcoming summit between him and President Trump.
Yeah, Dr. Nagy, what do you think? And just as Dr. Cheng mentioned, the timing is very interesting because this is right ahead of the second summit between Kim Jong-un and Donald Trump. So what do you make of this?
So I think Dr. Chen is a very interesting point. From my point of view, I think that the visit to China to visit, on behalf of President Xi is important, as it's important signaling to Washington that both China and North Korea have other options if the diplomatic negotiations with Washington don't proceed in a more positive, incremental and result-oriented fashion. And Chairman Kim mentioned this specifically in his New Year's speech. He said that without a sincere action by the United States, that North Korea will pursue other options. On the China side, and I do think the China side is important as well, is that the trade war is putting pressure on China, and I think President Xi is trying to signal to Washington that it can be a positive force in dealing with North Korea, or China can play a more complicated position with regards to North Korea in terms of Washington's long-term objective to denuclearize North Korea.
Professor Kim, what do you think? And also, we said this is the fourth time that Kim Jong-un, for him to cross the border into China within the past 10 months. So this is not something that frequently happens in international relations.
That's correct. Especially when one recalls the last April, North Korea-South Korea joint statement, I was quite struck, quite surprised to find that Kim Jong-un and Moon Jae-in, they were talking about end of war declaration of Korean Peninsula, either by three nations or four nations. I thought that was an extraordinary tactic or strategy on the part of North Korea to attention of China into this issue. I think before last April, China was not really hands-on about the North Korean issue. But that was the moment when two Korean leaders met together, and they were saying that, well, the end of war declaration can be done either by three nations or four nations. And that, in my view, really succeeded in persuading China that China must play a far more active role in this issue. And secondly, I think it's actually so natural for North Korea to coordinate or at least have an in-depth discussion about the talking points before actually the North Korea-US summit meeting takes place. Because this is an issue which can never be resolved without meaningful engagement of China. Therefore, it makes perfect sense to talk beforehand, before you start meeting Donald Trump. And also, I think it really makes the situation far more advantageous from the viewpoint of North Korea, because North Korea can now present an overall appearance or overall a landscape where it's basically the United States is the odd man out, and then the rest of the world, like China, North Korea, South Korea, Russia, they are all kind of more or less aligned in demanding more reciprocal approach, and that's what North Korea is aiming at, I think.
Well, Dr. Nagy, what do you make of the role that China has been playing on the Korean Peninsula issue?
Well, I think in many ways, China as well as Russia has presented the double freeze in testing and nuclear development for a freeze in the United States assertive action on the peninsula. And I think what we've seen is in de facto adoption of that policy by the United States and North Korea. So I think China has played a positive role. I think they can continue to play a positive role by pushing Chairman Kim and North Korea to adopt more of the economic policies that China has used in its first 40 years of reform and opening up, you know, this incremental process of developing special economic zones and loosening its economy so it can develop along the lines that are appropriate for North Korean society. And I think that China has a lot to teach North Korea in this regard. And more exchanges, more learning from China, I think, could put North Korea in a very positive position in terms of development. And this would be in line with Chairman Kim's focus on the economic side of the Pyongyang policy of parallel nuclear and economic development, which he announced last year at his New Year's speech, that he'd focus on economic development after securing a strategic nuclear deterrent.
Yes, we will touch upon the economic development of North Korea in later, but Dr. Cheng, we know that Xi Jinping said during the talks with Kim Jong-un that he hopes North Korea and the U.S. will meet each other halfway. But it is said that recently there are some concerns in the U.S. that China could use the North Korean issue for leverage in its trade dispute with the U.S. But actually, China has kept the two issues separate, isn't it?
I think so. So you see, so on the one hand, China and China's President Xi Jinping and the United States President Donald Trump met on the sidelines of the G20s, and both leaders agree the two countries need to work together to promote denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. So on that one hand, so China and the United States leaders have already reached some kind of consensus to promote the denuclearization jointly. And on the other hand, you see Kim Jong-un came to China, and he visited China four times within 10 years. That was
10 months,
sorry. That was extraordinary. That's demonstrated that Kim Jong-un did trust China, and did he want to build a strong relationship with China. And so I think that China is well positioned to pool the two countries together and to produce something positive. And I have to emphasize that Kim Jong-un came to China was not a secret. China's government informed South Korea and the United States in advance. And I believe after Kim Jong-un's visit, and China's government will continue to engage South Korea and the United States and brief them about what's going on between China's leader and North Korea's leaders in Beijing.
Mm-hmm. And of course, denuclearization is at the center of all the talking points, which is also perhaps the key sticking point between North Korea and the U.S. So, Dr. Kim, we know now is almost 7 months after the Trump-Kim summit in Singapore last year. Where exactly are the relations between the two sides?
Yes, everybody had a great deal of hope. And also at the same time, some people had a great deal of misgivings and fear about Singapore historic meeting. Now, after that, things have definitely kind of calmed down and more or less stalled. Now, as far as I see, the reason is because of the huge discrepancy between the U.S. perception of denuclearization and the North Korean perception of denuclearization. Now, starting from Bush administration, the United States basically abandoned all meaningful diplomatic or workable diplomatic solutions, and instead they start talking about CDID. So this CDID has been the currency, the term of the art for the past more than 10 years. But in fact, that demand is totally unrealistic because basically it demands North Korea to disarm before United States does anything. It's a completely unrealistic fantasy. But it somehow gained currency, and almost like everybody in the world was talking about CDID as if it is some kind of decent demand, but North Korea has never accepted it. And after the last Singapore summit, the CDID term was not in the joint statement, and North Korea, in my view, managed to insist on the wording, which was very satisfactory for North Korean viewpoint. So over the past several months, the whole world is in the process of adjusting their perception, moving from the one-sided, unrealistic demand of CDID into what is more realistic, as President Xi said, like two parties should come in the middle way. That means more reciprocal and more realistic and more fair approach. So that we need some time for all parties to adjust to the better understanding of denuclearization.
Dr. Nagy, what do you think? Do you think that the two sides are now walking towards a more realistic approach towards the solution of this problem?
So what we've seen, if we make a comparison to the fall of 2017 to today, we've seen a de-escalation in acerbic rhetoric from both sides. We've had several meetings with Mike Pompeo visiting Pyongyang. Of course, we had the Singapore summit. So the North Koreans have ceased, overtly testing their long range and technologies. So I do think this is a positive, and this is we've created some political space for them to start to do the real hard work behind a long term denuclearization process. And I should be clear that, you know, denuclearization process would take likely decades. And I say decades because, first of all, we need an accounting of all the missiles and nuclear materials and nuclear weapon systems. We need to find jobs for all the nuclear scientists that have spent a lifetime investing in this. And we need to reorient the North Korean economy away from a militarized economy. And these are very, very, very long-term objectives, and they require commitment over many presidential terms. And this is going to be a very difficult and long-term project. And now that the diplomats are talking, and now that we've moved the discussion to the diplomatic quarter, I think that there's more chance for incremental denuclearization process over the long, long term.
Well, in terms of the denuclearization, Dr. Chung, we know that in Kim's New Year's speech, he said that he and his country declared at home and abroad that they would neither make nor test nuclear weapons any longer, nor use them and proliferate them. So can we understand this as how North Korea defines the term denuclearization, which sounds not exactly the same as the U.S. CVID approach?
Yes, it is. And you see, North Korea is just a freeze and stopped making and testing the nuclear weapons and missile weapons. And you see, it's still a long way to go to achieve so-called CVID, complete, verifiable, irreversible denuclearizations. And most important, I think it's United States and North Korea and the leaders get together and define some kind of operational definitions of the denuclearizations and take concrete measures to move forward in that direction. And CVID, that's the long-term objective United States and the DPRK try to accomplish in the future.
So do you feel that the fact that the two sides are now not exactly on the same page on denuclearization, do you think this will continue to be a main obstacle in the following discussions?
Yes, it is. And it's a main bone of contentions between China, between the United States and the DPRK, and also amongst ordinary scholars. And people try to come up with a feasible, functional definitions of denuclearizations. But from my personal perspective, I believe North Korea need to give up the nuclear weapons at the same time, North Korea could maintain its legitimate right to use nuclear energy in a very peaceful way.
Yes, and Dr. Kim, as we said earlier in that New Year's speech, Kim Jong-un also added a warning that if the U.S. doesn't keep the promise it made in front of the world and misjudges the North Korean people's patience and continues with sanctions and pressure, then North Korea will have no other choice but to explore a new path. So is Kim Jong-un really thinking about a new option if the talks with the U.S. fails? And what exactly are the options there?
Oh, yeah, I suppose everybody is trying to figure out what he meant by new options. But I think it's basically impossible to pinpoint what exactly he meant, simply because he wanted to be as open-ended as possible. But what he clearly said was that United States' demand is one-sided. The demand that North Korea must disarm first while U.S. is hitting North Korea with sanctions. That will never happen. So Kim Jong-un was reiterating that don't expect that to happen. Okay, and if U.S. Is not willing to move towards a more concrete, workable step of a reciprocal nature, then nothing really useful can work out through the North Korea-United States negotiation. So North Korea will have to explore other relationships. It could either be inter-Korean relationships, or it could be something through North Korea, China, and South Korea. I don't know, but something other than U.S. And North Korean bilateral relationship. That's what Kim Jong-un was indicating. But I think most importantly, he might be suggesting that we should perhaps decouple the question of nuclearization on the one hand and the question of peace on the Korean Peninsula on the other hand. Because a lot of people, especially the conservative segments of South Korea and the United States, they have somehow believed that there can be no peace without denuclearization. But I think Moon Jae-in of South Korea, he also already suggested that peace and denuclearization may not be like logically linked together. I'm sure that, you know, we can have peace with a nuclear armed nation, like, you know, France has nuclear armed, China has nuclear armed, you know. But then there is peace between England and United States, or between, you know, China and United States. There is no threat of war. So it is perhaps important that to notice that Kim Jong-un might try to separate the question of denuclearization from the question of peace, and then explore peace more energetically.
Dr. Nagy, what do you think? What do you think the new past might refer to?
I'm sorry, could you repeat the question?
I mean, Kim Jong-un mentioned in his New Year's speech that North Korea might have to explore a new path if the United States continues with the sanctions. What do you think he is referring to?
Well, I think that Chairman Kim has had a very successful 2008 in terms of re-engaging in the international community through a maximum engagement strategy. And I think it really is confronting for Washington under President Trump, who was really trying to stress a maximum pressure campaign. Chairman Kim has engaged with the Chinese. He's had four visits to China. He's had three summits with South Korea. He's had a summit with, of course, Mr. Trump. And he's also engaged with high-level diplomacy with other high-level diplomats. I think he's demonstrated that he's willing to engage and negotiate, and I think this is a very clever tactic to demonstrate that he's willing to commit to diplomacy without making really any commitments to comprehensive, verifiable, and irreversible denuclearization. Also, I think it's really important for us to understand that over the past year, we have seen no testing in missiles, and we haven't had any nuclear tests. But that being said, you know, we haven't had nuclear tests from Russia, from China, from the United States. All this is done with computer simulation. So I don't think he actually needs to engage in overt nuclear testing now. Likely we've seen a refinement of missile technology, and we've seen a continuation of uranium enrichment. To continue to produce enough fissile material for additional nuclear material. So although the overt friction and tensions has disappeared, I think the underlying challenge of North Korea in terms of its nuclear and missile development is still very much a reality.
Okay, Dr. Chun, if we do see a full breakdown of the negotiation, of course, we hope that won't happen, but if that does happen, is it likely that the two sides are going to return to the previous stage, like in the year 2017, when North Korea made several nuclear tests and Trump threatened fire and fury against North Korea?
That would be the worst scenarios we may imagine. If the negotiations go nowhere in the future, so I believe the two nations' relations between the United States and China and North Korea will fall back to old mode of confrontations. And but I believe that's the one bad options. But there's another good options we may witness in the near future, so that the whole situation, the uncrepiness, has changed to a point of not returns. And I don't think the North Korea will stop pursuing denuclearization, pursuing normalized relationship with the United States, pursuing permanent peace mechanism uncrepiness. And also, I don't believe United States leaders, President Trump, will stop pursuing improved relationship with North Korea, pursuing the complete denuclearizations of Korea Peninsula, because both leaders, Kim Jong-un and President Trump, invested the personal time, personal energy, personal reputations on such a kind of negotiation. They both want to move forward to produce something significant.
Thank you. We're speaking with Dr. Cheng Xiaohe, Associate Professor with the School of International Studies at Renmin University of China and also Senior Researcher with the Pangyo Institution, Dr. Stephen Nagy, Senior Associate Professor with the Department of Politics and International Studies at International Christian University, as well as Kim Chung Kim, Professor of Law at Korea University. And remind our listeners to listen to this episode again or catch up on previous episodes. You can download our podcast by searching World News Analysis. Let's take a short break here. Coming back, we'll continue our discussion.
I am Alka Acharya. I teach at the Jawaharlal Nehru University in India. Today has organized its programs and a stress on bringing in a lot of views from all over. It is an extremely good platform for information and analysis, and I wish it all success in the future.
You're listening to Today. I'm Zhaoying. Welcome back to our panel on the Korean Peninsula issue. And I'm joined by Dr. Cheng Xiaohe, Associate Professor with the School of International Studies at Renmin University of China and Senior Researcher with Pangyo Institution, Dr. Stephen Nagy, Senior Associate Professor with the Department of Politics and International Studies at International Christian University in Japan, Kim Chung Kim, Professor of Law at Korea University. So, Dr. Nagy, just now you've mentioned that Kim Jong-un spent more than two-thirds of his New Year's speech talking about his new focus on economy. And we know that on his trip to China this time, he visited a factory in Beijing that produces traditional Chinese medicine. So is he planning to develop the medicine industry?
Well, I don't think we know exactly what industries that the North Koreans are planning to develop. But what we've seen is over the past several years is the North Koreans have been experimenting with small-scale special economic zones. And these small-scale special economic zones are meant to, they're an experiment to see how they can match some level of income growth and consumption in North Korea and encourage that and use that to encourage economic development, while at the same time maintain socialist control of North Korea. And this is a process, it's a step-by-step process to see what works and what doesn't work. And again, this resonates very well with the Chinese experiment. You know, when Deng Xiaoping started the reform and opening up, you know, it wasn't a systematic process. As he said himself, it was, you know, crossing the river by filling the stones. And the North Koreans need to do that as well to engage in economic development in a way that suits the local conditions. And the local conditions are very different than the Chinese experience, and they're going to have to continue to find ways to develop their economy. And maybe some kind of traditional medicine may be the way to move forward.
Well, Dr. Cheng, Nagy just mentioned about the reform and opening up of Chinese Deng Xiaoping, but we know China, of course, does have a lot to share with North Korea in terms of this reform and opening up process, but what kind of external environment is needed for North Korea to develop its economy?
I think that in the first place, North Korea needs to formulate a new national strategy. And I think North Korea did. Last year, North Korea convened the so-called third plenum of seventh parties congress, and in which North Korea's parties adopted the new two resolutions. One resolutions announced the end of Binghamton Line, namely North Korea could pursue nuclear weapons and economic development simultaneously. And the second resolution announced that North Korea will continue single-mindedly focus on its economic development. I think North Korea has formulated a new strategy, and I think that's good news. But in the second place, I believe North Korea also need to create a favorable external environment for its reform and opening side to outside world. And when China carry out its meaningful reform, China normalized its relationship with the United States and other Western countries. So I think the North Koreans also need to do so. And unfortunately, now North Korea suffered significant diplomatic isolations, and also this country has been badly sanctioned by the United Nations Security Council. And so North Korea need to do something to make a change, to create more favorable external environment. And certainly there's many other things North Korea could do. For example, North Korea's leaders and also could, I think it's learn something from Chinese former permanent leaders, Deng Xiaoping. Deng Xiaoping had a lot of the experience, and his determination to open China's door to outside world and carry out reform certainly helped China a lot. I think that Kim Jong-un certainly could move in that direction.
Well, Dr. Kim, do you feel it's perhaps too early to talk about economic development or reform and opening up when the sanctions are still in place?
No, I think this is the time to talk about it. One thing which is rarely being discussed is the nature of South Korean government. You know, Moon Jae-in came to power after nearly 10 years of conservative ruling party government. Now, the South Korean conservative party, they actually did not want normalization of inter-Korean relationship. The South Korean conservatives had a great deal of similarity with the mainstream United States foreign policy establishment. South Korean conservatives wanted confrontation, wanted military tension, wanted to portray North Korea as this evil, strange, weird nation which needs to be isolated. But Moon Jae-in and his political party is completely different. So I think Kim Jong-un calculated that he has 5 years of very favorable environment from South Korea. And after Moon, if the same ruling party manages to maintain the power, he will have altogether 7.5 years from now on. So this is a great opportunity for North Korea to pursue economic reform, and it's very good and very clever, smart move on the part of Kim Jong-un to drop the Byung-jin policy and focus single-handedly on economic reform and economic progress. Mm-hmm. Because just one point I want to emphasize, this is the U.S. policy against North Korea depended on the narrative of North Korea being evil, axis of evil, a country which is really very strange and which needs to be isolated. But if North Korea drops this military pursuit and really engage with South Korea and focus on economic reform and economic improvement, then United States narrative might collapse. U.S. can no longer sustain the hostile policy against North Korea, which supports the international sanctions regime. And once North Korea succeeds in portraying the rest of the world that it is actually just an ordinary country trying to, you know, live a good life, then there will no longer be enough support to keep the sanctions regime to continue.
Well, Dr. Nagy, but the problem is the U.S. has insisted on denuclearization first and easing of sanctions second. So do you feel Trump is going to continue with this maximum pressure policy?
I don't think that Mr. Trump can continue his maximum pressure policy simply because the North Koreans and Chairman Kim have engaged in a maximum engagement strategy. It's very difficult to argue for maximum pressure when we see Chairman Kim engaging in diplomacy, whether it's with President Xi or President Moon or other international leaders. And I think that he understands that very clearly, and he will continue to engage with regional leaders and other leaders. Now, how to proceed forward again? The challenge is that I think that on the U.S. side, President Trump has sold denuclearization as the ultimate goal rather than some kind of agreement that is much more realistic, for example, some kind of moratorium on nuclear development, followed by, you know, a peace treaty or some other kind of carrot that the North Koreans can take home to say that, yes, we're going to stop nuclear development and we can get these benefits. That would be the normal process to move forward in terms of thinking about how to de-escalate the nuclear tension between the two states. But I don't think that is likely from this particular president in the United States.
Okay, Dr. Chen, on the Chinese side, Xi Jinping has said that China firmly supports Kim Jong-un on developing the economy and improving people's well-being. But how is China going to support North Korea's economic development and opening up strategy while at the same time abide by the UN sanctions on North Korea? What's the balance there?
That's a good question. And I see, and you see, the Chinese leaders made it clear China will support and firmly support North Korea's legitimate demands to seek the sanctions liftings and single-mindedly focus on its economic development and also create a favorable external environment for North Korea's new national strategies. But I think that China can do a number of things. Number one, China could render diplomatic support to North Korea. And you see, in the past 10 months, and Kim Jong-un has visited China four times. That extraordinary move greatly strengthened China and China and North Korea's relations. And China certainly expresses willingness to help North Korea to break its diplomatic isolations. On the other hand, China can also offer so-called Chinese wisdom, Chinese development experience to North Korea. In previous Kim Jong-un's visit to China, and he's visited some high-tech company in Zhongguancun, and recently he visited some pharmaceutical factories. And China could offers very, very and valuable development experience to North Korea. So certainly, at the same time, China could offer some bitter lessons China suffered in the previous years. So Chinese wisdom, I think, has played a very important role to encourage North Korea to pursue meaningful reform and opening its door to outside world. Certainly, if the sanctions is lifted in the future, China certainly could do more in the economic cooperation with North Korea. But current sanctions, I believe China can do a little bit in that regard, particularly to provide fund technology to North Korea and pull North Korea to China's One Belt, One Road, and China cannot do it right now. So I think for China, it's very important to encourage North Korea to continue to pursue denuclearization. Only North Korea takes substantive steps in exchange, at least the partial liftings of the sanctions, China and North Korea could do more in economic cooperation.
Professor Kim, in terms of the cooperation between the North and the South, Kim Jong-un said he's willing to resume key joint economic projects with South Korea, which includes the factory park in Kaesong and tours to Mount Kumgon. So is that something that's going to happen in the near future?
I suppose so. I hope so. It was actually the previous South Korean conservative government which unilaterally stopped the Kaesong industrial complex operation. It was not really part of the UN sanctions. It was the South Korean unilateral move, which was taken independently of the United States-led UN sanctions. Now, once, however, South Korean conservative government took that move, now to resume the operation of Kaesong industrial complex, the current South Korean government has to watch and be, tread cautiously to make sure that any move is not in violation of this fantastically widely cast net of UN sanctions and United States sanctions. So this is, I think, the area of primary interest for South Korean president to pursue. He will do his utmost to persuade the United States that it does not serve the interests of U.S. To block the inter-Korean cooperation and inter-Korean economic development. Because the more exchange, the more inter-Korean cooperation there is, the less threat against the United States. The North Korea will be perceived as a threat to the United States when it's isolated, when it's pushed to the corner, when its own existence is really at stake. Then North Korea becomes dangerous. But when North Korea engages with South Korea, then perceived threat against the U.S. will be reduced rather than increased. And I think that's what Moon's talking point will be when he sees Trump.
And Dr. Kim, we know that Moon Jae-in has also been promoting the proposal that the two sides could first discuss joint development while shelve unification talks. So how is this proposal being received by North Korea, by the U.S., and also back home in South Korea?
Oh, I think it's a very clever move. In my view, North Korea has been far more enthusiastic about unification of the Korean Peninsula. However, South Korea, especially the current ruling party, has been far less enthusiastic about unified Korea. And I think as an intermediate stage, the current administration, the current government would be perfectly happy to have two Koreas coexisting peacefully and maintaining a very vibrant economic and other exchanges. And I think that's much less threatening to other neighboring countries also, and that this kind of two Koreas coexisting peacefully with military tension removed, I think that's really far more wise option. The unification, I think it used to have a great deal of emotional appeal to old generation Koreans. But in my view, frankly, unification does not serve much practical, useful purpose. What is crucial is that there should the military tension should be removed.
Mm-hmm. And Dr. Chun, how do you feel that the diplomatic discussions between the North and the South, between North Korea and China and North Korea and the U.S. might build on each other and lead to some kind of progress in the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula?
I think it's if China, North Korea, United States and South Korea, the four countries could work together and seek some kind of solution to the ongoing dispute. That would be greatly conducive to any kind of negotiations between the United States and North Korea, and to pursuing the denuclearization of the Korea Peninsula. But I have to say, so you see, China and North Korea's relation has been greatly improved by Kim Jong-un's full visit to China. And as a matter of fact, the China and the South Korean relations are also greatly improved, and the two countries work together and overcome the negative consequences caused by so-called sad issues. And on many issues regarding the Korea Peninsula, regarding North Korea's nuclear weapons, nuclear issues, and China and the South Koreans are on the same page. And United States and China's relation has been in a very bad shape, but the ongoing trade negotiations between China and the United States has produced some kind of negative positive results. I believe all the relationship among the four nations I just mentioned are moving to a very, very positive directions. I believe such a kind of positive development among three nations could greatly help the realizations of denuclearization on Korea Peninsula.
Well, Dr. Nagy, what more do you think we can expect from countries like Japan and Russia?
This is a very good question. I think that in terms of, let's think about Russia first. I think Russia's behavior will depend a lot on how the bilateral relations between the United States and Russia continue to evolve. I suspect if it evolves in a negative direction, that Russia will attempt to complicate and weaken the United States' presence on the peninsula, and that could be to in helping support the North Korea, maybe loosening sanctions on North Korea, maybe working in cooperation with China and South Korea to accelerate some kind of process. I think there's many different things that could happen. If Russian-U.S. relations improve, I think then there's a possibility that Russia may try to contribute to pushing the evolution of the peninsula in a direction that may favor some of the interests of the United States. Japan is a little bit more complicated. I think that from the Japanese point of view, they have extreme concerns about North Korea's nuclear missiles, their short-term missiles, their mid-term missiles, as well as chemical and biological weapons. From the Japanese point of view, it's not just the nuclear issue. It's this whole assortment of weaponry that is a concern for Japan in terms of a military threat. And they would like all of these systems to be removed from North Korea. And I think that from the Japanese point of view, these are long-standing security threats that won't disappear in the short term. And they have very big concerns that, the prioritization of the United States maybe ICBM missiles rather than all these other missile systems that can affect Japan. Japan is interested in some kind of settlement with North Korea, and I think that they would be willing to engage in some kind of compensation with the North in exchange for denuclearizing and demilitarizing in all those areas that I mentioned.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dr. Kim, do you feel that some of the disputes between some of the key players, like the dispute between Japan and South Korea on wartime forced labor and also the sex slaves, or the China-U.S. trade issues, or the U.S.-Russia dispute, are they going to have some kind of spillover effects on the Korean Peninsula issue?
Yeah, recently there has been a bit of difficulty between Japan and South Korea regarding this wartime forced labor. But as President Moon recently explained, it was something which the government cannot do anything about. It was civic groups and public-minded lawyers who pursued this topic for decades, and they launched lawsuit nearly 6-7 years ago, And then the case came eventually, ultimately, to the Supreme Court about 3-4 years ago. And then the Supreme Court already ruled that as long as Korean law is concerned, yes, these claimants have a case. So the case went back to the factual level again, and then the case went its way all the way to Supreme Court, and then Supreme Court ruled. So there is really nothing the government can do. And this is really not related to all these strategic interests. But somehow, Japanese government finds that all this is somehow, you know, strategically kind of manipulated by some forces, which is, in my view, an unfortunate misunderstanding. But if the relationship between North Korea and South Korea becomes far more improved, then there might be one important consequence, which is the United States troops, military, stationed in South Korea. What will happen to them? And what is the consequence for Japan? But that's a very complicated issue, which we will have to talk about when sooner or later.
Okay, Dr. Nagy, we've have witnessed a year of diplomacy on the Korean Peninsula in the year 2018 and also in the beginning of 2019. So how optimistic are you that all these reconciliation gestures will lead to a meaningful resolution of this issue in the near future? Or it will be no better than those times we saw in history, like the back and forth of this issue?
Well, I'm relatively optimistic that I think in 2019, South and North Korea will engage in more economic cooperation, more cultural exchanges. I think there'll be more dialogue between the top leaders. And this is a positive. And I think that this may actually, the security situation on the north on the peninsula may de-link from the security challenges between the United States and North Korea. And this could be a positive development in 2019. I think that Chairman Kim has demonstrated in his actions last year and in his words that he's definitely interested in developing the economy, in learning and borrowing from his Chinese neighbor. And I think that if he can provide the economic fruits to his people, he may be able to get support for continued engagement on the diplomatic side for some form of de-escalation of the nuclear tension and perhaps long-term denuclearization.
Dr. Cho, what's your take?
Yeah, I share Professor Nagy's optimistic predictions. And this year, last year, we witnessed dramatic changes on the Korean Peninsula. And I believe such a kind of dramatic drama will continue to unfold, even though we cannot rule out any kind of the turns and twists in the United States and the North Korea's negotiations. But I believe the second summit between Trump and Kim will take place soon. And if the two leaders really decided to get together and jump into serious negotiations, I believe their meetings will produce something fruitful and positive. And other major players like China, like South Koreans, are very supportive. Their support certainly helped to facilitate the negotiations between North Korea and the United States.
Thank you, Dr. Chen Xiaohe, Associate Professor with the School of International Studies of Renmin University, Dr. Stephen Nagy, Senior Associate Professor with the Department of Politics and International Studies at International Christian University in Japan, and Dr. Kim Chung Kim, Professor of Law at Korean University. Thank you all for sharing your insights on this topic. To hear this episode again or catch up on previous episodes, you can download our podcast by searching World News Analysis. I'm Zhao Ying. Thank you so much for listening.